Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Peter Fines, former publisher of Time Out Travel Guides, has turned his hand to writing books. Reviewers and book readers have loved his engaging and humorous prose, so it was a pleasure to record an interview with him to talk about the travel writers that he most admires, a dozen of whom he has accompanied in his latest best-selling book, Footnotes, A Journey Around Britain in the Company of Great Writers. Recorded on Clapham Common in South London on a windy February day in 2020, pre-pandemic lockdown, when frequent jet planes and a helicopter interrupted the recording. We're actually very close to the beginning of your earlier book.
We are.
Oak, Ash and Thorn.
Oak and Ash and Thorn, yes.
And what's that book about?
That's about Britain's woods and trees and forests, the state of them, why they're in such a lamentable state, and then what we can do to help them, but also about sort of culture and magic of woods.
But we're hardly in a wood here.
No, we're in a little scrap of wood. So we start here because I wanted to make sure that all kinds of woods were covered, including this little copse on Clapham Common, which is where in the past, perhaps presently, MPs have been known to lurk, looking for people, friends. And this is one such place. So I included that because it's a beautiful little place, full of blossom in the spring, but also it's much used by people for many different reasons.
And we've got ourselves here on a very muddy and windy day, so maybe we won't creep into the copse, we'll just walk around the outside.
Well, I think we're quite safe.
In your hand is your new book.
Yes. It's called Footnotes, A Journey Round Britain in the Company of Great Writers.
Which were the writers you chose?
Well, I wanted to have a historical spread. So the earliest writer was a man called Gerald of Wales, who was an archdeacon who went around Wales in 1188 trying to whip up support for the Third Crusade. And the most recent is Beryl Bainbridge, who went round England only in 1983.
Now, I have to actually say I've actually met Beryl before she died.
Yeah. Have you? What an amazing woman.
She was a friend of someone called Yankel Feather. And he had a show on in Camberwell, and she came. And apparently she and Yankel and Cilla Black were all involved in the Cavern Club.
Yes. Beryl held a party in Liverpool in the early days to which three of the future Beatles came, including, so they say, a 15-year-old George Harrison, who got into some kind of dispute with the leader of the Liverpool Philharmonic about what kind of music they should be playing, and George was putting on Elvis Presley, and the Philharmonic man was putting on classical music. So the legend goes, because Liverpool is full of legends.
So you went to Liverpool?
I did go to Liverpool on the trail of Beryl Bainbridge, who in her turn was following J.B. Priestley, who went around England in 1933 writing a book called English Journey.
Yeah, I think that's quite a famous book. Here.
Yes, it's a brilliant book. It was written at the same time as George Orwell's Road to Wigan Pier. But in my opinion, it's a much, much better book. It's full of humour and full of rage about, you know, 1930s Britain was disintegrating into the most terrible slump. And so he went to Liverpool, he went to Birmingham and Jarrow and Newcastle. He went all over. Beryl followed him precisely along his route, and I followed her.
When you say in terms of chronology, there was a bit of chronology involved, but there was also trying to go clockwise around Britain.
I quickly gave up the idea of starting with the earliest, Gerald of Wales, and finishing with Beryl. I had this idea I was going to do the Seven Ages of Man. So I actually started with childhood and Enid Blyton in Dorset, and I finished with the death of Dickens in London. So there's 12 journeys, there's 12 authors, there's 6 men, 6 women, and I follow them around in one continuous loop, so it's rather like a relay. So as soon as we've finished with Enid Blyton, the baton gets passed to Wilkie Collins, who then passes on and on and on. So I'm passed between these authors, end up going around the whole of Britain, although I did linger a very long time in the southwest and got a bit mired in Wales.
Wow, this is an unusual tree trunk, isn't it?
Look at that. A false acacia.
Is that one that has thorny bits?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
But do you know why it's got this sort of extraordinary trunk?
No, I don't know. This is one of the strangest ones I've ever seen. I mean, there's one there, and it's got the more usual trunk. But this one is beautiful, but deformed.
Deformed in an intriguing way.
Yes.
And because of the sort of lichen and moss and fungus on it.
Tolkien-esque.
It has. Yeah, we're into Middle England.
Yes, exactly. Welcome to the woods.
of which of these authors would you like to have accompanied on their journey?
Yeah, definitely J.B. Priestley would have been a lot of fun. J.B. Priestley and Beryl Bainbridge were fun because they drank and smoked a lot and had a good time, and they went round cities and loved a good pub and a sing-song and everything. I would not have liked to have accompanied Enid Blyton, who was a rather fierce and woman full of strictures and commandments.
Now, she, for example, she actually was born in London, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. She was born in East Dulwich, above a shop in Lordship Lane, I think. After her success, she moved to Beaconsfield, but she had her holidays every year in a place called Swanage in the Isle of Purbeck. She went the first time in the 1930s and then went back all the time. She hated other countries. She went to America once. I think she went on a cruise to Morocco as well. But basically, Swanage was the place she took her holidays.
I have to say that I have a really horrible memory of Swanage.
Yes.
I went there as a school kid, and we had to climb the cliffs.
Yes.
And I sort of got cracked fast and hated it. And ever since, there's never been a mountain or cliff climber.
Right. No, you can still do cliff climbing down in Swanage. I met an adventure man, as he called himself, who did those things. Enid would have loved it. Enid was a huge one for adventures. She loved a good thunderstorm. So she was a quite passionate woman, Enid Blyton. But she's been hugely influential on us all. I was incredibly pleased I started with Enid Blyton, because it made me realise how much everything we think of Britain and England today is sort of steeped in what she created or amplified with her famous five stories and little villages and thatched cottages and friendly bobbies and ginger beer and all that idea about what England is. She churned out the books, 750 books she wrote in her lifetime.
But they're only short children's books.
No, they're only short books, absolutely. Okay. But even so, her famous five novels, she could write one of those in a couple of weeks, she reckoned.
And how many of these of these authors, when they were writing and researching the books they wrote, actually went for a walk?
Well, Enid never went anywhere other than to Swanage, and she potted around and played a lot of golf. But you can visit all the places that she knew very well on the peninsula. So they're all there in her books, and you can sort of follow that. J.B. Priestley walked a little bit, but also was chauffeur-driven in his Daimler, because by that stage he was a very successful author. But he also took coaches. Wilkie Collins went round Cornwall. He wrote a book called Rambles Beyond Railways, which the Cornwall was in 1850, had no railways, so he walked the entire way, although I have a slight suspicion he might have got a coach occasionally, because he seemed to speed very quickly from Loo to Liskeard. But he walked.
It was in fact pre-railways.
It was pre-railways. In Wilkie's day, in 1850, he was a young man then, 26, I think. The railway stopped at Plymouth, literally. The end of the line was at Plymouth, so he got off and he just got on a ferry and then started walking. He was very keen to explore a wild and unexplored place in Britain before it was changed forever by the railways.
Oh, so he was quite prescient about it?
He was, yeah. Of course, as you say, the railways have then disappeared since, but there was a brief moment. There were Cornwall was full of railways, but Wilkie got there beforehand, and I think he over-dramatised what he experienced, but nonetheless, he was a young man who enjoyed a good tale.
And other walkers amongst the 12?
Well, there's a woman called Celia Fiennes, who rode around England on horseback in the 1680s and 1690s and visited every single county. And so she was very useful, because I had this idea my journey was going to be one continuous loop. I could always call on Celia to get me from county to county. So she horse rode, but I decided...
And is she some distant relation?
Very distant relation. She's my first cousin 10 times removed, I had to discover. But then I've also discovered that anyone with any European descent is also likely to be similarly descended from her, just by the way these things work. But we share a name, so it's very exciting.
I mean, I did rib you a little earlier on, didn't I, when I said I was reading the book and I thought, you know, this is meant to be in the footsteps of the great writers, and that's
It's a journey around Britain in the company.
A company, and I think I muddled up footnotes. I'm not sure whether you actually even qualify to be a talking, walking interview. Most of the time we sprint on the train or the car.
Well, Gerald was on horseback, but also walking. So I walked a fair bit around Wales, and I walked up Snowdon in the company of Somerville and Ross, who were two late Victorian Edwardian women writers who wrote the Irish RM, and they were on a horseback tour of North Wales.
So they wrote under a pseudonym?
Yes, she were Somerville and Ross. Her name was Edith Somerville, and then the other woman was called Violet Martin, but she wrote as Martin Ross. So in fact, at the time, many readers thought they were men. They were writing their hunting stories. Very funny hunting stories. Readers then assumed that no women would be writing like that. And they were brilliant. So I followed them up Snowdon, walking all the way. Although they staggered up in full Victorian garb and slippery shoes, putting us all to shame. And then Johnson and Boswell. I went round Scotland and Johnson and Boswell, who were on horseback, which I wasn't. I also walked around, went to a beautiful place called Glen Affric.
Because everyone's heard of Johnson and Boswell, but how did they come together? What was their...
They met in London, Boswell, Scottish, and much younger than Johnson. Johnson was famous by that stage. Boswell went out of his way to throw himself on Johnson and managed to ingratiate himself and became lifelong friends, as well as his biographer. So Johnson was very pleased to have someone write down all his wise words. And Boswell was very good at that, and he used to goad the great man into saying more and more outrageous things and then would scribble them down. Anyway, Boswell spent a long time trying to persuade Johnson to come on a trip round Scotland with him. And then, much to his amazement, when Johnson, I think, was 67, he suddenly decided to come with him. So they headed off from Edinburgh, right up to round the islands, up to Skye, through the Highlands. It was after Culloden, 1745, so the Highlands were being emptied, defeated. Johnson was very keen to see them before that whole way of life disappeared forever. They were being emptied and cleared, and you know, people were emigrating in huge numbers. But it was still there. So they went around together, and Johnson writes a lot about this, whereas Boswell writes a lot about Johnson, is the essential difference. But they're both absolutely fascinating books. Boswell allowed Johnson to publish first, who was deferred to the great man. And they went round the Highlands, and Johnson became absolutely obsessed by how few trees there were left in Scotland, which is interesting when you go and see the Scottish landscape today, and that you know, all the uplands are completely denuded. Johnson was the first one to write about this, about what we were doing, whereas that landscape we assume is natural now is entirely not. Boswell couldn't care less about trees, and in fact he was slightly embarrassed that Johnson was berating the Scots for allowing their trees to disappear, but of course it was the English as well who were up there shipping it down.
You know, of the many, many authors who've written about Britain and its surroundings and what's going on and things like that, who would you like to have included that you had to leave out?
Yes, I left out so many. But I wanted to do Arthur Ransome, because he, you know, Norfolk Broads and everything, but I simply ran out of time and space. Also, I was trying to have six men and six women, so I had to have a whole chronological spread. So it was a complicated thing I was patching together. Would have loved to have had Dorothy Wordsworth.
Yeah.
No Coleridge, no Wordsworth.
Because, of course, it's William Wordsworth's 250th anniversary.
It is. So maybe we're all going to be inundated with Wordsworth, and it's quite nice not to have him. My publishers obviously wanted me to have the more famous authors. Enid was brilliant. When I started with Enid Blyton, I was so pleased. And then Charles Dickens was a great one to have. He's in the book twice, because we have the death of Dickens. He died in his home in Kent, Gadshill in Kent.
150 years ago on the 9th
yes,
of June.
That's right.
1870.
And he was taken by train to Charing Cross and then by carriage to his tomb in Westminster Abbey, where he really didn't want to be. He'd asked to be buried locally. So we have a much younger Dickens going through some kind of raging midlife crisis when he goes up round the Lake District with Wilkie Collins, claiming that he wants to walk on this place called Carrick Fell, which is a miserable little hill. But actually what he wanted was to pursue an 18-year-old actress called Ellen Ternan to the Doncaster Races, which I think Wilkie knew about, but no one else did.
You know, of the writers you write about, which of them do you feel actually were the best at writing about landscape and
yes,
and British culture of their time?
Somerville and Ross are absolutely brilliant on nature and landscape without even sort of appearing to be, because they write about people mostly and about their horses, but in fact, incidentally, they're just the most evocative nature writers, well worth hunting out. Priestley is brilliant on people, as is Beryl Bainbridge, and cities and the fabric of cities. Priestley is always grumbling, particularly about the ugliness of the people of Birmingham or the sort of horror of Jarrow and everything, and he's made himself many enemies, but he's a very evocative writer. Dickens is good on Wilkie Collins. They write about each other, which is very amusing, and Dickens is rather patronising about poor young Wilkie. So Johnson not so strong on landscape, just about his trees and his...
When you were researching Gerald of Wales, did you have to read Old English? Did he write in Welsh or Old English?
No, he actually wrote in Latin, worst of all, which I don't read. So I read him in translation, I'm afraid. So apparently he wrote the most beautiful Latin that there was at the time, although he said that, so we don't really know. He also said he was the most handsome man alive in Wales in those days, and again, we don't know. But he was a tall, tall man with incredible eyebrows, he said. Anyway, he wrote about beavers at great length. He was rather obsessed with beavers, and he had this idea that if they were being hunted, because humans apparently lust after a beaver's testicles, then the beavers would self-castrate and then show the hunters that there was no point in them chasing them anymore. And in fact, if a beaver had already self-castrated, it would run to the nearest hillock and display its legs to the hunters, and the hunters would turn around and go away. But one of the things about my book's about is about change. So when Gerald was in Wales, there were thousands of beavers still alive living in the River Tavy and all around, and now, of course, there are none, although there's tentative signs they're coming back.
Okay, so what's next?
It's another travel book, and I'm going to Greece to look into Greek myths and find the places where they were actually set, and then to find out contemporary resonances with today. So the Greeks, and it's just a way of looking back and seeing if there's anything they can teach us about what's happening now, particularly about our environmental crises.
And what's drawn you to write travel books anyway?
Well, I ran a guidebook business for many, many years, so I had the travel bug, and I just love other travel writers. So
there seems to be a resurgence of nature writing. Is that the same with travel writing?
Yeah, there's a lot of travel writing, but all the genres are starting to blend. So memoir, travel, nature, they're all merging into one, particularly in my books. Literary, history, everything. And publishers don't necessarily like it. They like to keep everything segmented. It makes life easier. But in fact, I think there's a blurring of genres going on.
Now, what I usually do is I usually ask the person I'm interviewing to recommend a couple of walks. Could you recommend a couple of walks for people? Perhaps something that comes from, you know, which of those authors you might accompany on their walk?
Yeah, the walk I'd recommend, if you can get to Cornwall, is to go to Lamorna Cove and walk the coastal path around there. Lamorna Cove is where a woman called Eithel Colquhoun lived, who I followed briefly. She was an extraordinary surrealist artist and writer, and had the best sense of place of any of these writers. And she wrote the most brilliant book called Living Stones about her time in Lamorna Cove. So do the walk there if at all you can.
Okay, and another one?
Yes, I like urban walks, actually. I would walk around London. I would follow Dickens. It's his 150th anniversary of his death. I'd follow Dickens, possibly start at his place of death in Westminster Abbey, then head up into his home in Doughty Street, the Dickens Museum. You can weave through the streets around Seven Dials, which you wrote a lot about, and then end up near Bill Sykes's pub, the One Ton in Farringdon.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Peter Fiennes. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.